On this episode of the Flata Show, number 69B, it's the second part of the interview with Ninja from Hot Fussels and Rebel Matters podcast. We talk about Canadian television, religion, science, and podcasting. This and more. The Flata Show, starring Kenty. Welcome to the Flata Show. Tab for my diet. Tab, delicious. Welcome to the Flata Show. I'm Kenty, back again. Jose's in the other room talking to Johnny, because Johnny just got back from birding, and Jose is greeting him. You can reach me at Kenty, K-E-N-T-I-E, at theflatashow.com. Or also, you can actually reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com. Also, so that might be easier. flatusshow@gmail.com. And you can also reach me at 206-339-JOSE. This is a phone number courtesy of K7.net. You, too, can get your own phone number from K7.net by going to their website and signing up. And what it is that people can call this number and leave messages, and those voice messages will be sent directly to your inbox and your email. It's convenient. It's only a toll call. It doesn't cost anything. And it doesn't cost anything either for you if you sign up for it or for the caller unless it's out of their area. Then it's a toll call. So, it's inconvenient for us East Coasters. But you know what? A lot of phone plans have unlimited continental U.S. service. So, figure it that way. It doesn't cost anything extra. So, anyway, K7.net, thank you for my phone number. Last week, I actually said 207-339. So, I don't know if anybody called that. I doubt it. But it's 206-339-JOSE. Okay, let's see. Well, the show is the second part of the interview with Ninja from Hot Fossils and Rebel Matters podcast. I'm sorry for burping. Apologize. Just some quick news. Johnny and I saw the movie The Departed. It's this new Scorsese film with Leonardo DiCaprio, Matt Damon, I think, and Jack Nicholson, pardon me, Martin Sheen, and I forget the woman, but anyway, it's a mafia movie, but it's about the Irish mafia in Boston. It has some beautiful scenes of Boston, so if you're not familiar with Boston, you can take a look at that film and see it. I didn't really care for the movie that much. There were some parts that were good. I think the movie as a whole didn't hold together. One very telling thing, and this is sort of my gay activist hat, is there's a scene where Matt Damon, his character says to Alec Baldwin's in it, I'm getting married, or maybe Alec Baldwin says, when are you getting married? And Matt Damon's character says, soon. And Alec Baldwin's character, who is a higher up in this police department, is like, well, that's good that you wear a ring because it lets people know that you're not a fag and it helps you with your advancement. And, you know, from personal experience, it is more difficult to get advancements when you're a fag in traditional work than if you're married. It's absolutely true. People who are married and have babies and stuff, those people get advancement over the single people, especially if they're single and homosexual. And people in the audience laughed at that because, you know what? It's true. That's what happens in the real world, so to speak. And it really made me angry. I just sat there. I wasn't laughing, but it just was so like a bald-faced truth, you know, right there out in the open. It made me angry. It made me really angry. So I just wanted to tell you that. And I'm not angry at Scorsese or the person who wrote that. I'm And I'm just angry at that. It's true. You know, it's not really anything to laugh about. People laughed at it because it is true. But what, you know, I'm only one person, so what to do? I think that's why gay people really need to, like, you know, get together as like some sort of union and boycott things, you know, not boycott, but like go on strike. You know, if all the gay people went on strike, you know, what would happen to the economy? I don't know. Apparently, we're only 5-7% of the population. I just learned that. And you'll learn about that next week. So I don't know if it's 10% or whatever. I think it's higher than 10%, but Joe G tells me it's 5-7%, so I don't know. Science be damned. Okay, I already talked about MySpace. This particular episode, like I said last time, is link-heavy, so please check out the show notes at theflatusshow.com. You'll find the links to the podcast and the show notes, and you can link to different things we've talked, Ninja and I spoke about. I also bought a DVD called Love Me or Leave Me. It's a Doris Day DVD movie, and it has James Cagney. It's from 1955, and it's a movie... It's a biographical movie about the 20s songstress Ruth Etting, who I adore. And so I wanted to see this movie, and I got it for $4. Why? Because Tower is going out of business. It's 30% off, and I got a $10 gift certificate. So I paid $4.79. I also got the other day a four CD set of Doris Day box set, 109 songs. Love it. And she's really good. And I read in the notes how she said she was inspired. Who she's modeled herself after vocally was Ella Fitzgerald. And if you listen to Doris Day, you can hear how she was influenced by Ella Fitzgerald. I thought that was interesting. But it's from a company called Proper. And they put out vocals and jazz and stuff, and there's always these four CD sets. So I actually bought a few earlier this year. One was Joe Stafford, and another one was Anita O'Day, who is the complete opposite of Doris Day. Anita O'Day was a drug addict, and she looks really messed up. Doris Day is clean cut. So, but if you find these proper box sets, they're worth it. They run $25. I got mine on sale, so I paid less. I mean, you know, going at a business sale price. So, but they're worth it. They're worth $25. They're worth $30. Something interesting I found out on these songs is that these singers, all three singers, were big in the 40s, early 40s, up through the 50s, right? That's when they were, like, the girl singers. They didn't usurp, but they were... Okay, during the 20s and stuff, it was the boys singer, like, I don't know, like Bing Crosby and stuff. And, you know, later on in the 30s, you have, I don't know, Frank Sinatra was in the 30s or whatever. But it was mostly men vocalists. And in the 40s, these girl singers, and I put in those in quotes, I'm not trying to be sexist or anything, like Doris Day and Rosemary Clooney and like Joe Stafford, they started being the centerpiece of the big bands. And so they sort of usurped the males or became equal to them as vocalists. So Doris Day is really good. Anyway, as I was saying, a lot of these songs that these singers sang, which I didn't even get to this, I'm looking at them, and a lot of them were from Tin Pan Alley in the early part of the 20th century, redone in the 40s, you know, different arrangements, a little jazzier, but... for example, there's At Sundown. Doris Day sings At Sundown. And that's an old song from Walter Donaldson's song. I have that. I'll play that sometime. And, of course, that is from the 20s, I think. And so maybe it's from when she did Love Me or Leave Me, the song about Ruth Etting. I don't know. We'll find out. But same with Ruth Stafford and the other ones. These old standards redone in the 40s. It would be akin to... Actually, that was the 40s, so it was a 20-year difference. It would be like somebody taking a song from the 80s now and singing it and making it fresh and new. And that happens. We hear it all the time with all sorts of songs. But isn't it amazing, like 1940 is to 1920, what 2006 is to 1986. It's just kind of bizarre when you think about it. I think more, I don't know, maybe more, maybe it's the same amount of change. A lot has changed since 1986, my friend. So I am bloviating, to quote Ricardo Lapis Lazuli. So I'm going to end this beginning and start. Yash! That's Brenda Starr, you hear, finishing up her scoop just for you. Brenda Starr. Let's see, last time we left off, Brenda Starr followed Jig to this big celebrity party and met Spiff there, who has, since the last adventure with him, which was two adventures ago, or storylines, I should say, he became a gossip columnist. So Brenda sees Spiff and says, hey, what's going on with Jig? And we find out that Jig goes to these Hollywood parties and schmoozes, and he's bisexual, he's gay, he's straight. He does whatever he can to get in with, to get into the right people so he can advance his career. He's essentially an untalented actor trying to hobnob with the big guys. For example, he's made two low-budget films, at least. One called Love Busters, and the other one, Beast in the Boudoir. So we can imagine what kind of films he's in. Probably softcore porn. You don't really see anything. So we find out that Jig is schmoozing with Tina Titan, the owner of Medusa Studios, and she is a big deal in Hollywood. Brenda leaves the party and goes back to see Darth Fable. And knocks on his door and says, you know, I want to talk to you about Lula and the baby you stole. So Darth says, not since my glory days have I been asked such rude questions. I'm flattered. Because he's been forgotten by Hollywood. When he left Lula, he went off to, like, all, he wanted to get away from Lula. And he went to become lost to the world, I guess, and forgotten, essentially, because he was getting out of the acting business. Hi, Jose. Jose's walking around. So he went to places like Fiji and Tahiti and stuff, and, you know, to get lost. And when he, you know, came back, he was forgotten. Hollywood forgot him, and he'd wasted his money, so now he has a little bungalow, but he's poor as dirt. So in response to Brenda's question, he says, I'll make martinis. So he makes some martinis. He goes, I haven't had a martini since I had martinis with Lula, the young Lula. So Darth says, Lula, wanted love and loyalty, but I could give her only one. And as for the baby, he says, that he had been there when the baby was born, but he didn't take the baby. So we still don't know really who took the baby, because Lula thinks Darth took the baby. Now, we find out that the reason why Darth left, and it just so happened that the baby was stolen at the same time, he left because he didn't want to be a husband or a father. He was just tired of acting, of playing the part that Lula wanted. And we find out that it was, is Darth Fable is gay. And he's like, well, do you have to be so specific about it? Can't there be mystery? He just couldn't love Lula. He could be loyal to Lula, and Lula was, you know, beautiful and everything, but he just couldn't love her. He wasn't made to be her husband, though they were a handsome couple. So then Brenda says, well, how do you know Jig? And he goes, who? And he goes, oh, Jig, I met him in a dive bar, and he just recognized me. He recognized me, first of all, and he wanted acting lessons. So it's morning, okay? Brenda has spent the entire night talking to Darth Fable. And so Brenda arrives at Lula's mansion. It's in the morning. Jig and Lula are eating breakfast, and Lula says, Brenda, sit down and celebrate. Here, have some champagne. And Brenda says, I don't drink before 7 p.m. Lula says, well, it's 7 p.m. somewhere in the world. So we find out that the reason why they're celebrating is Jig was offered a job by Tina Titan. So Lula takes the drink and she starts to faint. She goes, oh, I shouldn't be drinking in the morning. And so she faints. Jig takes her away to her room, to Lulu's room, while Brenda calls 911. The paramedics arrive. Brenda goes into the room first and sees Jig, like, over Lula with a piece of paper. And Lula has a pen in her hand. And Lula, at this time, you read that she whispers Rosebud. And then she's taken away by the paramedics to the hospital. This time, Jig says, well, I can't go to the hospital because I have an audition. And Brenda says, well, I thought you got the job with Teen Titan. And he goes, well, I'm always auditioning, you know, in this business. I'm a professional. So he doesn't go to the hospital, but Brenda does. And she calls Spiff from the hospital on her cell phone and once asks him to set up an appointment for her to meet Teen Titan. So after this is done, the doctor arrives and says, Lula looks good. The fact that she's 92 or whatever is, you know, it's amazing that she's alive. But Brenda can't get any information about her prognosis because there's a note in the medical records which says that only Jig Lovelady is to be talked to, is to be, you know, this disclosure is only to be made to Jig Lovelady. So at the end of this, Brenda arrives at the building for the interview with Teen Titan. So that's it for now. Read Brenda Starr to find
Dreaming out. Dreaming of Colorado, out in the golden west. Dreaming of hills and valleys. And rest deep in my heart, there's a longing just for a sight of you. I know you're always waiting. I know you're always true. Colorado, Colorado, I love you. Paradise forever lies 'neath skies of blue. In the sunshine or in shadow, ever new. Colorado, Colorado, I love you. Beautiful Colorado, land of my golden dreams, garden of sun-kissed valleys, home of the silvery streams. All through the world I have wandered, leaving you far behind. Now that my heart is lonely, I've wakened just to find. Colorado, Colorado, I love you. Paradise forever lies 'neath skies of blue. In the the sunshine or in shadow, ever new. Colorado, Colorado, I love you.
So what do you think the next thing is for, like, video podcasts and stuff? What do you think about the video podcasting?
I think that's really where it's going to go, because I think people are very much more interested in visually oriented stuff. I think that those of us who really love audio and radio were probably the same people that always loved audio and radio, as far as I can tell. So one of the things that concerns me is that people who do like radio and audio, just moving away from the video casting piece for a moment, when I ask people, my friends and my family, if they know what the podcast is, they go, "What? What on earth is that?" And then you start explaining it, and they go, "I don't have an iPod. You know, it's that old story." And you go, "Well, you don't need an iPod. Well, I only have a dial-up line." So, for example, I have a lot of friends who either don't have computers, or if they do have computers, they have a dial-up line. And if they do have DSL, they're too busy doing email and, you know, uploading their pictures from their camera. And that's what they do with their computer. And, you know, podcasting or downloading, even downloading videos and the radio type stuff is labor intensive.
It is.
And I think that's one thing that's going against it.
Well, with subscription, like something like iTunes, though, you subscribe to it and it automatically updates it. And then you listen to it whenever you want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it is. People don't understand about iTunes. They don't want to download it. That's what a friend of mine said. They're sort of afraid of it. My family has a classic response. "Oh, Mom, I'm doing a podcast." "Oh, that's nice, dear." "When are you going to come down and see the baby?" My sister's having a baby.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. So I'm going to go down there and see the little nipper, whatever he is.
Well, you know, what you have to do is you have to burn your shows to a CD and make them listen to it.
Yeah, but they only have turntables, so I need to actually burn them onto, like, you know, a vinyl.
Okay, what about cassette recorders?
No, they only go
they
back
don't
to...
They have that?
Yeah, maybe even 78s I'm going to have to go back to.
Okay, that's tragic.
Yeah. That's why I moved to Boston.
Oh, that's worse than I thought. Okay.
Yeah, worse than you thought. Okay. Yeah. Now, my partner and I, we just started watching, and your crew might laugh at this, because first of all, we didn't know about the show originally, and you'll know why in a minute. We watched Degrassi Junior High. A friend of his told us about it, because, you know, she said, "Oh, there's this cute children's show you have to see." So we started renting it on DVD, and of course, it's totally Canadian, you know?
Very.
So what'd you think about that show? Because I we're looking at the earlier one from the 80s, I guess 86 or whatever, when it was first made. And then the newer one, there's a whole new season. So the one from 86, I thought it was pretty, those storylines are pretty, not racy, but, you know, not what I would have considered, like, I think they're advanced, you know? I don't know. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? I mean...
Well, the censorship laws are very different here in Canada, and there's a lot more. I mean, we can use, we can use four-letter words on our CBC television.
Wow.
That's not an issue. So you'll see all kinds of television programming where foul language is used, for example. And our TV programs will deal with issues that American television programming just simply won't touch.
I was going to say, you know, even in there is this one scene where the high school bathroom seems to be a place where these kids talk to each other a lot. This is one part. The two boys are in the bathroom urinating, talking to each other. I'm like, you leave it. The Beaver would never do that.
Never.
They didn't even have a bathroom. So tell me.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me about Canadian television.
Basically that's basically the main difference, is that we can deal with a lot of subjects, and people are very interested in seeing subjects from all kinds of different perspectives. So we, you know, the whole thing about Janet Jackson's boob was such a non-issue here. And we were just flabbergasted that it became such a big deal in the United States.
Well, you know, it's not a big deal for most of us here. It's only a big deal for the small, you know, the religious right.
Yes, okay. I hear you.
Because God forbid you show a breast, you know? I mean, I think European magazines, like, they show breastfeeding in magazines, you know? That's like a problem. So tell me about the best Canadian television show that we don't know about in the United States.
Oh, man. You know, I've stopped, you know, in the last year, I've more or less stopped watching television.
Okay, well, so I understand that.
Oh, I know. Okay. There is a show that's been running for about 2 years, I think, and Special K watches it quite a bit, and it's called Metropia. And it's this fast-paced, kind of one step above Degrassi kind of programming. Mm-hmm. It's like a really fast-paced young people and, you know, all, you know, what their relationships are and what's happening. And, you know, one of the nice things about it is that there's, you know, lots of queer characters in that show and lots of different kinds of issues that they deal with. And, you know, that aren't skirted, you know, unwed pregnancies and all that kind of thing. Like, there's no sugarcoating. There's a lot of no sugarcoating in Canadian programming. So anyway, that's one program that's called, it's called Metropia, and it's a drama type show in the spirit of Degrassi, I suppose.
Yeah. You know, that's a good way of putting it. It's not sugarcoated.
Yes.
That's another good sugarcoated. I'm gonna have to. I have to have names for my podcast, so.
Okay.
Not sugarcoated might be a good one too. Metropia, do you think that's on DVD now?
It might. Maybe the first season might be. Yes.
Okay, yeah. I'm gonna have to look that up on Netflix.
Well, if you can't find it, let me know, and I'll see if I can find out some more for you about it.
Sure.
Have a copy sent down to you, perhaps.
Hey, that'd be great. I won't. Object. So,
well, let me give. Go
yeah,
ahead.
No, go on.
I was going to say, let me give that some thought because I'm not, as I said, I haven't been really watching a lot of television over the last year, so I don't really know what's happening.
Okay.
In terms of television, except for we did watch Ugly Betty.
Is that Canadian?
No, it's not Canadian. That's an American. It actually is a show that's South American.
Really?
And what happened was Selma Hayek said, "This is an amazing show. I've got to bring it to the United States." So she's one of the executive producers, and she brought it she made it an American sitcom. So it's on every Sunday night or Thursday night. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't watch any really much television.
Okay.
I watch public TV at dinner time. You know, when we're eating dinner, we'll put on you know PBS whatever's on, and then after that, we just watch DVDs from Netflix.
Oh. Okay.
You know, TV shows like we're watching The Wire, which is really great. It is. It's very good. I think it's an HBO show. It was HBO or something like one of those. And we're watching 6 Feet Under. Have you seen that?
Yes, I've seen one or two shows of that. Yes.
I think that's an excellent show too. We've seen all those on DVD because we don't have cable. We don't really pay for that. I think paying for cable is insane. I mean,
I agree. We got rid of our cable last year around this time. Well, another good show that, I would have to say that the shows that were on Showcase or HBO or some of those other networks are definitely much better than the ones that are on, the public stations, the public network stations. That's true. Have you ever seen one called, Dead Like Me?
I think I've heard that one, but I haven't seen it. Is that good?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Is that what it's called, Dead Like Me? I can't remember now. It's the one about the group of people who are Grim Reapers.
It sounds familiar.
Well, it's brilliant. They only did two seasons, but if you can get hold of... season two is definitely much better, but season one's pretty cool too. But if you can get hold of a couple of episodes of that, you might find that interesting. It's kind of like 6 Feet Under kind of humor.
So, what was I going to say now? What about religious upbringing? Do you have a faith background with your growing up or?
Well, I'm culturally Jewish, but I didn't grow up with any religious training, at all. I would say that at this point, I'm culturally Jewish, but I don't align myself with any particular religious philosophy, if you will.
Okay.
And I have a hard time understanding why people believe in God, although I envy those of you who do. I have to say that I really do envy believers.
Yeah.
Because those that have that kind of faith don't, that's one less problem for them. They feel that's one less problem they have to worry about. It eases their way through life, is the way I've heard it described. I don't know how do you feel? I mean, you're inside your belief in God, so I suppose that's an unfair question to ask.
Well, no, that's okay. I just always felt that there was a God, okay?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Now, where my faith comes is, you know, and I consider myself a Christian in many ways, but I don't believe, I have problems with doctrine, in traditional Christian doctrine, with like the idea of the Trinity and stuff. I mean, I believe there's a God and Jesus is his son, but I don't believe Jesus is God. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So, you know, and apparently there's this third thing called a Holy Ghost.
Okay.
And so for me, when I read the Bible, I think of God as God and Jesus is Jesus and the Holy Ghost is just God doing whatever he has to do, you know. It's not
in the background?
It's like when they say the Holy Ghost, it means that's God. It's not like a third thing, you know. I think it's like another name for God, I think. Now, for me also, my grandmother, her family, her I found this out, is they're Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like 1/8 Jewish, but I can see from growing up that there was a lot of cultural things that we did that was Jewish.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I found out just recently that, now when I was growing up, at Christmas time, we were always given Hanukkah gelt, okay? Now, no one
yes.
else had Hanukkah gelt, but we did. And I found out from my mother's that when she was a kid, her mother used to have them play dreidel, which is very, you know, that's closer to, you know, Hanukkah and stuff.
It is.
So, you know, and there's other things like food issues, like different types of foods we ate and stuff, lots of potato pancakes and stuff like that, you know, that came out of, you know, European Jewish tradition, you know, the Germanic, the Ashkenazi Jews, I guess, you know, because it was from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why I have a problem with the Trinity, because I'm really Jewish. My genetic code is telling me monotheism means one, not three.
So your great grandmother was from Germany?
No, she wasn't from Germany. The family came from it was German. It was my grandmother and her father.
Oh, okay.
In fact, that side of the family, that Jewish part of my family,
mm-hmm.
was in America forever. They were like you know, I don't know how long ago they were here, but they were here a long, long time. They fought in the Civil War, and one was on the that family was on the Wall Street, like a board of something or other.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get more details about that, but it's really, you know, interesting.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Yes.
Yeah.
To have that whole side of your family that's probably a little bit foreign to you, or maybe not so foreign to
it's,
you.
It's not really that foreign, because where I grew up, there was a lot of Jewish people, so I knew a lot of Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, the Jewish culture is not foreign to me.
Ah, okay. Well, for me, I find the Trinity, like the whole idea of the Trinity, is very poetic and beautiful and mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just one of these people that you got to prove to me that, you know, these things exist. I've got to see them in front of my eyes. I've got to see the PhD paper.
Yeah.
Or I can't believe it.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. But, you know, in terms of, you know, the Trinity or different ways of looking at God, I find it all very, very poetic is the only way I can put it. And beautiful, in fact.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. I think with the God, you just have to, I step back and you think to yourself, I get these sort of, you go out of your body and you just see the vastness of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to describe it. And I'm not taking drugs at the time. So I don't take drugs. But don't you ever have a sense of this higher, this grander scale of things that are going on beyond you in time. It's like there is the past and there's the present, and it's vast. And I think that that's where I approach the essence of God.
Okay.
Now, Jesus, I mean, there are historical things written about Jesus to show that there was somebody named Jesus, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know, I mean, he says, I guess I take things at face value. I don't know if that's the right word. I just assume he is a son of God, but I think we're all sons of God, you know?
And he was able to
interpret the law and say what God wants, you know? And it wasn't as complicated as it had been up to that point.
Okay.
Because up to that point, the Jewish faith, I mean, not all people, because clearly there were pagans, I mean, like Romans and stuff like that, which had whole different codes of law. The Jewish law, you know, talks about all sorts of things. You know, you can't wear two different types of clothing. You can't, you know, do this. You can't do that.
Right.
And Jesus said, you know, there are only one great commandment, and that is to, you know, do not put anything above God, you know, and to love your neighbor as yourself is the second one. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's the essence of Christianity, you know, the reinterpretation of law to really know what God meant, you know.
Well, when you talk about the vastness of the universe, I mean, I absolutely agree with you there, but I don't connect it with necessarily any... Maybe that is part of my spirituality as well, but I don't connect it with an entity that you might call God. I mean, I just see it as, you're right, it's vast and it's mysterious and it's awesome, but I don't know if I can call it God,
Do you ever have a moment where you're frustrated at a situation and you might just say, don't you ever cry out to something saying, you know, why isn't this working? You know, how can I get past this problem? And then a lot of times when I do that, the answer comes, you know, and I think of that as a sort of a, not magic, but, you know, I think of that as being God saying, this is where you go. This is where you know, look this way. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I don't ever have that feeling that I call out to something and it actually answers me. If I do, there's usually silence.
Mine's
like,
usually...
God, where are you? There's usually silence.
And you get a busy signal. The number you've reached is disconnected.
Right. Not in service.
That's terrible. I'm sorry.
I think... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I sort of... You know, I don't envy or not, but I find it really interesting that kind of existence where there is no God, and I don't think it's bad. You know, I don't think you need saving or anything like that. I just find it really interesting, and I mean, this is what is fascinating. We're both human, right? We're all the same, right? Humans are the same. We all have the same chemicals and, you know, brains and everything. So why is it that some group of people have these experiences? And I have to assume that you're having the same experience I'm having, that you do certain things the same way. But you define it in a different way. Or you know what I'm saying?
I think that's the point. Yes.
Yeah.
I think you hit it. Hit it there. It's my interpretation, or it's the way I deal with those same experiences.
Yeah. And it's the way you deal with them. You know, it fascinates me. But I don't think it's bad. I'm not one to, you know, tell you you have to be do anything special.
But I understand. Yeah. But I have a huge sense that I'm connected to everything. I mean, I really firmly believe that there's no, you know, there are separations between me and objects and other people, but by the same token, there's many, many connections between me and objects and other people as well. And for some of the same reasons you're talking about, you and I are made of the same stuff.
Yeah.
But so then,
do you have any,
so is everything else.
Do you have any idea of a spiritual, like, laws that you might keep, or have you thought about that? Like, what do you think about the spirit?
Laws.
Like, what do you think about having a spirit? What do you think about that?
Oh, you mean do I have a soul?
Yeah, do you think that? What do you think about that?
No, I don't. I think I'm biochemical. I think I'm a biochemical mass.
And that's it.
That's it. And that biochemical electrical mass, and that everything that's happening to me is electrical. That doesn't make me any less talkative or egotistical.
I think of the soul as I think of the body as the soul in chemical clothing.
Oh.
And I think that the soul creates the chemistry around you. It sort of congeals it, so to speak.
So your soul's inside the biochemical electrical mass.
It's not inside. Yeah. It is the chemicals.
It is. Yeah. Okay.
You know.
Okay.
But I think I think the consciousness survives. You know, I think consciousness lives forever. I do. I think. I also think that time is simultaneous. That there is no. Uh-huh. There's no thing. There's no really. The idea of a linear time is that's not the true nature of time. I think the true nature of time is. It's that it's simultaneous.
So time is a construct that we use, and we are misinterpreting it.
Or this is what we have right now as a group of people. This is what we have accepted together to call time. You know, so we can work in this framework. You know,
but if my consciousness, see the where it falls down for me is if my consciousness is forever, like everlasting. Why can I not remember the past before I was in this vessel? And how come I can't envision what it will be like after I'm not no longer in this vessel? That's the kinds of questions I ask.
Well, first of all, I don't believe that there's a like reincarnation where there's a before and after, but I do believe that we maybe can exist in different times at the same time. So that at the same time that I'm existing and possible other personalities existing in the what I would call the past or the future, but it's really at the same time. And I think there are times where we do connect with those other personalities in dreams, in something that we read in a book, it snaps with us. But it's not necessarily something, you know, I think there are probably some people who are more in tune with their other personalities, like these other parts of themselves, the greater soul, I'll say.
But are they in this existence or are they in parallel existences that you typically don't have access to? You're saying that sometimes
I think you do have access to them. I think it's whether or not you direct your focus at that. It's all how you're focused, you know. Take your day, right? Don't you ever find things that happen things that happen like a coincidence?
All the time.
Well, that could be something that's saying, that could be something. You know what I'm saying? I can't give you an example, but a coincidence, like something that happens all the time might be pointing you or saying, the universe is saying, hey, you know, but it's not the universe, you know, it's us, you know, I really believe that we're multi souls or one soul that's multied this is the way I think of it. Look at your hand. Is that the hand is the soul and then each finger, each digit is a projection and different times so that the thumb is in the Middle Ages and the index fingers in this time. And the other fingers are in different places or whole different constructs. But the soul, they all connected to the soul.
So sometimes you're in the Middle Ages and sometimes you're a snail on the ground? Is it that specific?
No, I wouldn't say a snail. I mean, I don't think you'd be a – I don't know, maybe. But you see, the thing is you're focused in – we're focused in this time. So generally we don't, you know, have access to these other – you know, parts of ourselves.
You're saying the soul is forever, but that just because I can't remember before I was born and don't have access to the time after I die doesn't mean my soul isn't in those other places.
That's right.
That's what you're saying.
Yep.
Okay. Well, again, you know, I need to see the dissertation on that.
Yeah.
You know, that's... but... I don't know. I like science, I suppose. That's my problem.
Yeah, I like science too, so...
I get that sense of you as well.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
But
I mean...
You love science.
Oh, much so. I it was my first love, so it was biology and chemistry, and I love it. I really love science.
Is that your discipline?
When I when I started college, that was my discipline. But mm-hmm. I only completed 2 years because, and then I had to leave college due to financial and life problems.
Oh.
And towards the end of that point, I switched to linguistics.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's very scientific.
Yes, it is. I love language and the study of language and how things change, how language changed, like how English has changed and all that.
Mm.
And how Canadians say out.
Out? Out. Out. A boot.
Yeah, a boot.
Yeah, a boot.
A boot.
Unless we don't laugh when we hear that joke because we don't get it.
Oh.
We don't perceive ourselves saying a boot.
You know, I don't recognize, I mean, when I was watching Degrassi Junior High, I thought it was Made in America, right? And then all of a sudden, I kept on hearing everybody say oot. And it was like the only thing that really stuck out.
Okay.
I'm like, this is Canadian. So a lot, you know, talking about Canada again, there's a lot of Canadian actors and singers that come down to made it big in America, like Joni Mitchell and...
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody from Second City Television is from Canada. You know, John Candy and those guys.
Andrea Martin and Joe Flaherty.
Oh,
and,
yep. Andrea Martin. And.
Right. Oh, no, I think actually Andrea Martin is, I think she is American. I think she's the only one that is.
Oh.
Actually. Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, go ahead.
So anyway, I was just saying, what do you... John Candy or...
Yeah, John Candy. Yeah, you mentioned him. So.
Yeah. So what do you think about that, all your stars moving south into
I think that's, you know, that's where economics dictates they have to go. You know, that's where the visibility is. If you can make it in America, then you're going to make it in Canada as well. You know, for example, you know, Howie Mandel is a Toronto boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know lots of people, I mean, he's part of the community I grew up in. So I know lots of people who know him, went to school with him and all that, so...
Really?
You know,
Oh, wow. Isn't he totally. Like a born-again Christian?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Who am I thinking of? Howie Mandel. I want to look him up.
Bob Dylan, maybe.
I know Bob.
Look up Howie Mandel. Howie Mandel's the one, Let's Make a Deal. And he was on that show ER in the 80s. He played a doctor.
Yeah.
Not ER. Oh, what was it called?
I just want to add here, the Howie Mandel... Howie Mandel, found on Wikipedia. It is Saint Elsewhere. And he was in a movie. The reason why I thought he's a born-again Christian is that he was in a movie called Tribulation featuring Gary Busey and Margot Kidder. It's one of these Christian movies with Jack Van Imp in it. And it's about the tribulation, the rapture, and everything. So I know that these film companies who make these movies generally want their actors to give a statement of faith. And... that's why I'm assuming Harry Mandel is a born-again Christian or evangelical.
Well, it was an ER show, but I can't remember the name of it.
Mm-hmm. I'll look it up.
I'm
probably confusing him with somebody else.
You might be, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we here in Toronto go, oh, you know, Harry Mandel's one of our boys, you know, so it's all very exciting.
Mm.
So, we love that. I mean, you know, but, you know, Canadians have to go where they can have the visibility and I guess, make their name. So,
So how's the economy in Canada? I mean, is it just as, like, what's it like in Canada? Is there a lot high unemployment or how's that working now?
I'm not sure what the unemployment rate is. Yeah, I don't know what I can say about that. I think it's somewhere between 30 and, I don't know, that's a big number. Like, it's between 30, I don't think it is even the 30%. I'm not really sure. But, you know, in big cities, we have lots of homeless people, lots of what you would call inner city problems, but certainly nowhere near the kinds of economic problems and problems that you have in the United States.
Hmm.
I mean, we have health care, right?
Really?
So we have public health care.
So it means if you break your leg, you just go to the hospital and...
Yes.
Wow.
That's it. Oh. Right? So it's fully funded public health care. There's some things that you have to pay for, but by and large, if something happens to me, there's not going to be an issue.
So you don't have to worry about losing your house and everything else?
Never. That's not even a consideration, absolutely. So that's one of the good things. We have this public health system, which, you know, people like Hillary Clinton looked at and said, we need that in our country.
Yeah,
you know,
it's true. It's absolutely true. John and I had, my partner and I said that if Republicans take over the White House in 2008, we're leaving the country. So
you are.
Yeah, so Canada's a choice. It's closer than anything else.
Well, there's a podcast called Quirky Nomads. I'll just plug one of the Canadian podcasts.
Okay.
And it's about a woman. She does a show. She does like 10 minutes a day about, you know, some aspect of just something that she's interested in. And she'll either go out and interview people or talk about a subject that interests her.
Mm-hmm.
And she and her family said that if the Republicans get in the last election, they were moving out of the country. And they did, and they came here.
Wow.
Yes. So have a look at that one, Quirky Nomad.
So, okay, I'll look that
Sage,
up.
Sage Turtle is her name.
Sage Turtle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes for sure.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, okay, now where are you going with your show? Where do you think you're going to be doing it? I know you're doing it because you want to do it, and that's why I do my show. And, you know, so what other reasons are motivating you to do your show, and where do you want to be in a few years, I'll say, because 5 years is too damn long to think about.
Oh, it is. It is. I don't think I can think past a year.
Yeah.
I really would like to do more interviews, and I would really like to talk about certain kinds of issues in the queer community that certain queer groups want visibility on. For example, one of the areas that I think podcasting is helping queers is in the area of transgendered issues. And that's the next frontier of being queer, I think, is to bring those issues out into the forefront and have people understand what being a transgendered person means and how we can get the rest of society to accept that this is okay too.
Mm-hmm. I agree
so
with
those,
you.
You know, issues like that. I mean, I would like to keep queer issues in the forefront as much as I can, but I'm having a little bit of trouble getting momentum with that because other things kind of distract me, like movies that we see and things that we read in the newspaper and that sort of thing. So we kind of go on that path. And, you know, I had this, you know, amazing thing happen when we went to see Manufactured Landscapes a couple of weeks ago. Fabulous movie. And we walked out of the movie theater and there was the director and the subject of the film standing in front of us. And I just ran up and interviewed them.
Sweet.
Yeah. So that kind of diverts my attention away from doing, you know, a little more political things. But I would like to let the show do that as well. Because I think it's an excellent, uncensored forum to talk about whatever it is that you want to talk about or to bring people's attention to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's where I want to go with that.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. I know you did the Leslie, was it Leslie
Feinberg?
Yeah, Feinberg. You did that. Mm-hmm. Did that show. I'm surprised. It sort of surprises me how political she is. He has gone to sort of this communist, you know, pro-communist platform.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, it's difficult for a lot of people to handle that. When he was finished, there was a lot of people, the younger people were okay. They were all whipped up into a frenzy, a revolutionary frenzy. But those of us who were a little bit older and had been around for a while, we were like, what's exactly Leslie Feinberg talking about here? We weren't quite sure. We didn't really understand. And I guess one of the things that I would like to do is maybe even have Leslie or other people in Leslie's camp talk with me about what all that means. I would love to know what she... I only got a smattering of it at her lecture that evening.
Yeah. That'd be great for me. I'd love to hear that. You know, the thing I don't understand is that it's been my experience, and from what I've read, is that the communist regimes are far more nastier to gays than, you know, a place like America, which is pretty nasty.
Well, I think Leslie Feinberg, for one, would argue that's because of the way communism has been implemented. That if you implement communism and socialism the way it was intended to be implemented, that it's very good for society and economics and the social structure. So that's where, you know, I think that's where the disconnect is or the gap is.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I do, but I'm not so sure that communism could ever be implemented in the most ideal way it's supposed to be. You know what I'm saying? I think there's too many places for it to turn into dictatorships and Lenin-like, rulings. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because, I mean, we're human beings.
Yeah, that's right.
So you give human beings a little bit of power or, the tools to do things in a dangerous way, and they may just do it in a dangerous way.
Exactly.
And not really think about the risks.
Yeah, I agree.
And we're self-serving, so unless there's checks and balances, it's really hard for people in power to actually work for the good of the people they're representing. That's what I've seen anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
To put it simplistically.
Yeah, in a nutshell, as we say.
Yeah.
Okay, is there anything you want to add to, tell my wonderful listeners of the Paleta Show about Hot Fossils and Rebel Matters?
If your listeners want to listen to the show, and if you want to, give me feedback or tell me what you like and don't like, I'm open to that, and I'm all for expressing myself any way I damn well please. But, I also want to know what people want to hear about or how people want to see the show develop. So I'm open to that as well.
Okay. And where can they reach you?
At HOTFRM, HOTFRM, at gmail.com.
Okay. That's good. That's good. Okay.
Well, that was great. I could talk to you all afternoon.
I know.
It's been wonderful talking to you.
Nice talking to you too, Ninja.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll talk to you later.
Bye. Okay.
Bye-bye.
And hello to
Jose?
Well, Jose, yes.
Jose is taking a nap right now.
Okay. He seems to always be napping.
He is. He's always napping. He's the most nappingest dog I've ever had.
Oh, that's great.
Thank you, Ninja.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Flake Show. You can reach me at 206-339-JOSE, or you can reach me at Kenty@theflatishow.com.